Did you know heart disease is the number one killer of American women? And women often don't know they're having a heart attack. In this PSA, we're going to hear a little. Actress Elizabeth Banks plays a working mom trying to take care of everyone, including her young son, while sweating profusely and rubbing her clenched jaw and finally dropping the dishes.
Mom! I think you're having a heart attack.
Honey, do I look like the type of person who has a heart attack?
And down she goes. On her son's phone, the signs of heart attack for women, which include sweating profusely, jaw pain, and flu symptoms like nausea. So, question. Since she was having a heart attack, should she be taking an aspirin? Today we want to take a look at aspirin. When is it appropriate to take it for heart disease? What is the latest research on when kids should take it? Last week, a jury here in Massachusetts awarded a young girl and her family over $60 million because as a child, the girl had a rare toxic reaction to children's Motrin. The jury agreed there should have been more of a warning on the label. But Motrin and aspirin are not the same. The active ingredient in Motrin is ibuprofen, a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug. Aspirin is also a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, but aspirin has preventative benefits as an anticoagulant, a blood thinner. So, we're going to pick up questions about children and aspirin in a few minutes, but let's start with adults and that anticoagulant effect. Dr. Randall Stafford is director of the Program on Prevention Outcomes and Practices at the Stanford Prevention Research Center. So, Dr. Stafford, since this is a primer, start at the beginning. What is aspirin?
Aspirin is a chemical that's in the class of chemicals called salicylates, and it's actually found in the bark of willow trees, but was first isolated around the turn of the last century.
And what is it supposed to do?
It does several things within the body. It certainly acts as an analgesic, that is a pain reliever. It can reduce fevers. But the functions we're really interested in talking about today are its ability to interfere with the clotting process. What it does is essentially disables a type of cell in the body, the platelet, that is key in the process of clotting, so that people taking aspirin generally don't clot as well as others. And in fact, this protects them from some types of bad occurrences, particularly strokes and heart attacks. At the same time, that same property of interfering with clotting explain some of the adverse effects of aspirin. That is, the effects of aspirin that we don't want, particularly bleeding within the gastrointestinal tract, for instance, from a peptic ulcer, or in the most extreme case, a different kind of stroke that is caused by bleeding within the brain rather than the formation of a blood clot.
Okay, so what I'm hearing is aspirin can help some people reduce clots, but in other people it can thin the blood too much and you've got problems. So that brings us to who should take it? Who should take aspirin preventively, like on a daily basis, to prevent problems? Who should take it if, like that poor woman down with the dishes, they've just had a heart attack? Who should never take it?
Let me start out by making a very clear distinction between those people who have heart disease or have had a stroke in the past or are in the process of potentially having a stroke or heart attack and the population that is currently free from disease. At least they have no idea that they have heart disease.
Right.
In the population that has heart disease, has had a stroke, or is in the process of potentially having a heart attack, aspirin is absolutely mandatory, or a alternative medication that could take the place of aspirin. And around that issue of taking aspirin in those situations, there's absolutely no doubt that anyone who can tolerate it should be on an aspirin or one of the alternative medications.
Okay, let me stop you there with this category. I just have a couple questions before we move on. So you say somebody who has heart disease. Define heart disease.
I specifically mean those people who are known to have problems with the arteries that supply the heart with oxygen. These are the coronary arteries. And someone with heart disease includes those people who have had a heart attack in the past, who regularly suffer from angina with exertion, that is chest pain with exertion, those who have had an open heart surgery to bypass their coronary arteries, or those people who have had stents placed.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
so those are the categories of people who are known to have heart disease. And again, they should all be on aspirin without any doubt.
And by the way, this probably puts you in a category of someone who's talking to your doctor if you already have heart disease, which I'm sure you recommend that, you know, before anybody do anything, they talk to their doctor. But so this is a category that's pretty clear to you. With those people, though, are there ever times when they shouldn't take aspirin if they're taking some other medication that might interfere with it?
Yes, there are certainly alternatives to aspirin.
Okay.
The point is that population with known heart disease should be on aspirin or an alternative to aspirin, and sometimes on aspirin plus one of those alternatives.
Right, because you could be allergic or something else. So talk
Correct.
To your doctor about that. Okay, let's move to the people who are having a heart attack.
For the person who is suspected of having a heart attack and in whom the presentation, that is, their symptoms and signs are indicative of a heart attack, they should be chewing a full dose aspirin immediately.
Chewing.
And that's in a dose of 325 milligrams.
But chewing it?
Correct. That process of chewing enhances the ability of the body to absorb the aspirin and for the aspirin to play a role in interfering with the clotting process.
I'm sure you'd say, by the way, don't go running around the house looking for an aspirin. Call 911 first.
Correct.
Take your aspirin. So who should never take aspirin?
The issue of who should be on aspirin in this category of people who don't have disease really comes down to a matter of how much risk they're at for having a heart attack or a stroke. So the people who benefit most from aspirin are going to be those who are at higher risk of having a heart attack or a stroke. Now, that generally means that men are at higher risk than women, and that as we grow older, we're at higher risks of having those outcomes. The person who probably should not be taking aspirin is the person who's at relatively low risk, particularly young women.
That's Professor Randall Stafford, director of the Program on Prevention, Outcomes, and Practices at Stanford. We're going to have more about who should not take aspirin in a minute, but you might want to know you might be on that list if you're eating grapefruits or taking supplements like ginkgo or fish oil, because all have slight blood-thinning properties. And again, you want to prevent blood clots that break loose and cause heart attacks, but you don't want blood too thin. You want it to clot if, let's say, you cut yourself. So what about kids and aspirin? We'll take that up in 1 minute, here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to our conversation with Professor Randall Stafford, director of the Program on Prevention, Outcomes, and Practices at the Stanford Prevention Research Center. And we're talking aspirin. Did you know there's new research indicating it may prevent some cancers? We're going to have more on that. But to remind us all, aspirin is in the family of non-steroidal anti-inflammatory painkillers, or NSAIDs, along with ibuprofen and naproxen. Acetaminophen in Tylenol is also a painkiller, but it has weaker anti-inflammatory effects, so it's not called an NSAID. And as we've been hearing, unlike all the other anti-inflammatories, aspirin is also a blood thinner. It can prevent clots in people with heart disease, but also be dangerous for people who already have thin blood. And Dr. Stafford, we know aspirin can also trigger the often fatal RISE syndrome in children. So what do you say about children and aspirin?
Children should not be taking aspirin. There are better alternatives for pain relief and for fever reduction. And aspirin is associated with a particular syndrome that causes problems in children, but not in adults.
And you say children shouldn't be taking aspirin at all, not even children's aspirin?
Correct.
Huh.
Despite the name, most of us now refer to a baby aspirin or children's aspirin as a low-dose aspirin, again, because it's not appropriate to be using aspirin in children.
Well, and we understand that you shouldn't take aspirin if, as we said, if you had an allergy or ulcers, but also if you bleed easily, I read. Now, that brings us to another question. Should you be taking aspirin if you are already on a blood thinner?
Generally, aspirin has a role that's similar to other blood thinners. There are occasions where people, particularly those who have heart disease or who have had a stroke, need to be on both aspirin and another similar medication. But in general, there should be a great deal of caution about the use of multiple drugs that interfere with clotting.
It just seems like it's kind of confusing. And you say further, there are certain populations for whom there's really no guidelines, and these are people over 80. What's your concern there?
The population over the age of 80 is very tricky. On the one hand, we have limited information about the definitive risks and benefits of aspirin. At the same time, we know that this population is at higher risk for the types of events we're trying to prevent with aspirin. They're at higher risk of stroke. They're at higher risk of heart attack. In addition, they are at higher risk of some of the bleeding complications that we would like to avoid with aspirin, particularly GI or gastrointestinal bleeding. So the decision about using aspirin in the population 80 and above is a particularly complicated one. And for this population, I emphatically recommend a detailed discussion with the primary care doctor or cardiologist to clarify whether a physician feels that overall there's likely to be net benefit from the use of aspirin.
Okay. I have a little bit of a lightning round here. We know that aspirin is a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, but so are other medications like ibuprofen, Motrin, Advil, naproxen, Aleve, Tylenol. So when you say aspirin, do you just mean aspirin, or is that interchangeable with these other things?
Aspirin is not interchangeable with either Tylenol or acetaminophen, or with the other non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. Aspirin is unique in its ability to interfere with blood clotting the way that it does.
So if you are on the daily aspirin to help your blood thin and keep away those clots, if you suddenly stop it, does that mean you can suddenly get a clot?
It does, and there are instances in which the decision to take people off of aspirin is very tricky. For instance, those people who have had bleeding from a peptic ulcer but remain at high risk of a heart attack, the decision is not an easy one. And it may actually be better to continue aspirin despite the fact that one has had a complication of aspirin use in the form of that bleeding ulcer.
What about coated aspirin versus uncoated? There was a study that came out a while back, I think December, talking about how there might be fewer benefits from coated aspirin because of, you know, it has to dissolve.
The study that was published has caused a good deal of controversy. However, I don't think it's as definitive as some have suggested that that study is. That study looked at only a single dose of aspirin. And we know that a single dose of aspirin, if it's to be effective, really needs to be a larger dose and needs to be chewed. For aspirin given on a daily basis, there's no definite difference between coated aspirin and uncoated aspirin.
So what about some other new research we're hearing about aspirin's effects on other problems?
Yes, there's some very exciting news about aspirin, both in the area of dementia and in the area of cancer prevention. For dementia, there is emerging evidence that aspirin may prevent the progression of dementia in people who have early dementia. And this may increase the rationale for an older population taking aspirin. I would caution, however, that the rigor of the evidence available is not quite at the point that we would definitively recommend aspirin for dementia prevention.
Okay. How about aspirin and cancer? Fascinating research there as well.
Yes, this is another very exciting area and a new development really over the last 10 years. There's increasing evidence that aspirin functions to prevent the recurrence of cancer in those people who have cancer already, and also in those people who have polyps within their large intestine. Aspirin appears to prevent the occurrence of full-blown cancer. We know a little bit less, but we're increasingly also feeling that aspirin will act in the general population as a way of preventing colon cancer altogether. The data on this has been slowly accumulating, and I think we're reaching the point at which we may start to include prevention of cancer in our thinking about who should be on aspirin.
Professor Randall Stafford, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And we know, a lot to take in, so don't forget you can download a podcast and hear it again at hereandnow.org. Latest news is next, and then when texting between teens is too much, Here and Now.